I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valve, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast it with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for my ailments, the health equivalent to Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve.
Dr. Steve.
It's weird medicine, or in some other obscure language. Who the fuck cares? I'm Dr. Steve with my little pal, P.A. John. Hello, John.
Hello, Steve.
Welcome to the first and still only uncensored medical program in the history of radio. If you're new to this show, we do try to deal with medical problems honestly, with plain language, and with no limitations regarding content. If you have a medical question, you might be embarrassed to take it to your regular medical provider. Give us a shout at drsteve202@gmail.com. Or visit the Weird Medicine Forum at ronfez.net or call our voicemail line at 423-343-8884. That's 423-DIE-TOOTY. We're also on Twitter at twitter.com/weirdmedicine. Please remember, we're not your healthcare providers. Check out anything you hear from us with your regular doctor, PA, nurse practitioner, acupuncturist, or whatever. Tonight we also have Rob from Elizabethton, who had a scary episode that a lot of people out there will find familiar, and we're going to talk about it in some detail. Double vasectomy Todd will be revealing the origin of his other nickname, which we'll talk about. We're also going to do the peanut allergy controversy and the erotic asphyxiation questions we've been promising for a couple of weeks. But first, we may actually be able to do some good with this show and do something serious for once. We've got this swine flu outbreak. Now, we are recording this on Wednesday for play on Saturday, so things may have changed a lot since then. Hard to say. Right now, we have a question about it. It says, Dear Dr. Steve, I live in New York City, and I'm shitting my pants about this swine flu thing. What's the haps on swine flu, and what can I do about it? We also have this question that came in through our voicemail line.
Hey, guys. Swine flu, biggest story so far of the year. Should I get a spacesuit? Should we deport Mexicans? What's the story? How dangerous is it? Being a diabetic, I'm prone to catch these kind of things. So can you give us the lowdown on the swine flu? And is the media, as usual, blowing out of proportion, like Legionnaire's disease, bird flu, et cetera, et cetera? I'd like to hear your take on it.
All right, and then we got this question, too.
I've been hearing all this talk, whatnot, on television about this hog flu. I was wondering, is all my hogs going to get this and die?
So, we got a bunch of... We got a whole bunch of questions about the swine flu, and then we got that one. So, but you know, swine flu is a respiratory disease of pigs, and it's caused by a type A influenza virus. Now, there's type A and type B, and this is a type A, and it causes regular outbreaks in pigs. It's what they call endemic in pigs. And until recently, the disease very rarely spread to humans. Now, there have been some outbreaks. There was one at Fort Dix in the 70s where a bunch of soldiers got swine flu. As this recording, there were 1,600 cases in Mexico and 103 deaths, generally in young folks, and then 91 cases in the U.S. as of this recording, and most were in people who had traveled to Mexico or been in close contact. There have been a few hospitalizations so far, one death in a 23-month-old child. So this virus is totally susceptible. In other words, it is sensitive to standard antiviral drugs. Now, there are four anti-flu drugs. There's amantadine, ramantadine, and then Tamiflu and Relenza. The swine flu is resistant to amantadine and ramantadine, but it's totally susceptible to Tamiflu and Relenza. I kind of like the Relenza. Tamiflu's a pill. Some people can't take it because it causes nausea and vomiting. And like Tacy's one of those. If she takes one, it just has to touch her tongue and then she starts puking. Whereas the Relenza, you inhale it and it gets a lot less exposure to the bloodstream. And you inhale it two inhalations every 12 hours.
Hmm.
So now, how do you prevent this? Right now, we don't have a vaccine for it. They have a vaccine in pigs. I mean, you know, the farmers, swine farmers, vaccinate their pigs against swine flu. But we don't have a human vaccine yet, although they are working on it. And the question is this going to start to spread geometrically? In other words, okay, it's 91 today. Is it going to be 180 tomorrow and then double that the next day and then keep doubling until it runs its course, which usually takes, you know, a month to 6 weeks? Or is it going to be isolated? Now, if it's going geometrically, then there's a lot of pressure on the vaccine companies to make vaccine for swine flu. But the number of companies that make vaccine are limited. So what ends up happening is if they make swine flu vaccine, then they're going to have to stop production on next year's winter seasonal influenza vaccine, which means there's going to be a shortage of that next year. So if we have this perfect storm where we've got a really bad swine flu and then we have a seasonal influenza pandemic next year, it could be really bad. So because there won't be enough vaccine. So they're going to have to make a choice, and they're going to need to make it pretty quickly because, you know, if this thing really starts to spread, then they're going to want to have vaccine for it. Now, the federal government is making the antiviral medication easier to get. The problem with Relenza is you got a family of four, it's about $800 if you have to pay cash for it. Now, that's $800 if you're going to take it for the full month for a community outbreak. Let's say you're in, Nashville or something like that, and there's a concentrated outbreak in your neighborhood, then or at your daycare center, what they may recommend is to take the medicine for a month to prevent you and your group from getting it. And if you don't get it, then you can't pass it on, and it stops the progression of the disease.
Would you do that with all the other drugs too, like Tamiflu?
Yeah, they can. Yeah.
Okay.
The Relenza is easy because you just inhale it, you just have to inhale it once a day.
Would it be cheaper for the other one?
They're both pretty expensive.
Yeah.
And it's too bad that amantadine doesn't work because it's dirt cheap. It's been generic for years. So yeah. Stupid virus is conspiring against us. We need to be at war against influenza virus because it's just, you know, it's just evil. This stupid virus mutates, and that's why we have to have a different vaccine every year. And we tailor our vaccines based on what they have in Asia the season before.
Right, and we don't always hit it.
And it doesn't always hit. That's right. Now, if you had influenza vaccine this year, it won't hit this swine flu. They've already determined that. So this is going to be a new virus to your immune system, and so you can still get it.
So, and you just said that it would be 6 weeks, maybe, if it would run its course, possibly.
Yeah.
If it came.
Typically, that's what it's done before, and like that.
So, how would they do the vaccine and have it out and available? I mean, to me, it seems like it would take a long time.
Yeah.
And I'm saying like 2 to 3 months to figure out even if you were close to getting what it would be.
Well, they're pretty good at making influenza vaccines now. I mean, they know the parts of the bug or the virus that they need to make the antibodies to.
Okay.
And apparently they can do it pretty quickly. I don't know the time frame, to be honest with you. I'm not a virologist, though. If we need to for next week, I have a friend who's at Mayo Clinic who is like the government's number one vaccine dude, and we could get him on the phone if we need to.
Dude.
And he was my preceptor when I was in residency, and he's a cool guy. His name is Greg Poland, and we could get him on the air.
Hmm.
So, you know, we'll see. We'll see how this thing goes. If it's still a big story for next show, we'll have him on. There is a lot of hysteria about this. China, Japan, and Hong Kong and others set up quarantines for anyone possibly infected. That's not necessarily hysterical. But Russia and other countries banned pork imports from Mexico. You cannot get swine flu from eating pork. It doesn't work that way.
Thank God.
So you can still have you some sausage.
Pork is my favorite animal to eat.
It is excellent. On Monday, the European Union's Health Commission urged Europeans to avoid traveling to the United States or Mexico if doing so was not essential. So, an epidemic is an outbreak in a specific community. A pandemic, which is what they're concerned about, is an epidemic across continents or worldwide.
Right.
And to have a pandemic, you have to pretty much have a virus that nobody's been exposed to before. And so this one could go that way. We'll just have to see. So far in the United States, it's been pretty mild, but we've only had 91 cases. So when we have 1,600 cases like they do in Mexico, we'll see. Hmm. So the worst flu pandemic was in 1918, and according to the CDC, the virus infected 500 million of the world's 1.5 billion people, and it killed 50 million people. Now, that was a lot of lives would have been saved if they'd had anti-flu drugs, even antibiotics that don't treat viruses but treat the
pneumonia and complications,
things that come after it, right? And if they'd had mechanical ventilators, probably not nearly that many people would have died. So,
I want to know. So we had the bird flu how many years ago? Was that just not last year, but like 2 or 3 years ago, the big bird flu scare?
Well, it was a big bird flu scare, but we didn't really have it. It didn't jump to humans, so that's what they were worried about.
Bird flu, swine flu, is there going to be an aquatic flu in a couple of years?
Yeah,
you think?
Don't know if fish get influenza.
I'm just thinking from air to land to sea.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay, you were going with the whole.
Yeah, maybe there'll be a Popeye flu where you get a fish Popeye. Have you ever seen a fish with Popeye?
No.
Their eyeballs bulge out of their head.
Oh, I mean, it's a disease that fish get?
Yeah, fish get. We had a fish.
I hope we don't get that.
It's the most interesting thing I've ever seen.
If you want to avoid getting this, by the way, and you're not in an area where you need to go on the prophylactic medication, just make sure that you wash your hands often. I mean, that's how you get it. Somebody sneezes, and the virus can last for up to 2 hours on a table or on a doorknob. So they sneeze in their hand, they grab the doorknob, and then you touch the doorknob, and then you stick your filthy finger in your nose or your mouth or your eye, and that's how you get it. So, I know all the OCD people out there, I'm going to set them off with this, but yeah. You just got to wash your hands.
And again,
frequently.
A virus doesn't live unless it's actually in, well,
yeah.
It can be.
It can.
It doesn't live unless it's actually in you, but
right.
It can actually be acquired. It kind of just lays
right.
down and flops around on.
Yeah, it just sits there
stuff.
As long as it's in a little mucus or something. They're submicroscopic. I mean, they're on.
Right.
You can see them only with an electron microscope. So they're kind of on a molecular level. They're not really alive in the sense that we think of things that are alive. You know,
right.
things that take in energy and respire. They just multiply, and they use your cellular cellular mechanisms to
right.
reproduce themselves.
And it's RNA as opposed to DNA.
Well, now there's RNA viruses and there's DNA viruses.
Okay.
So. Yeah, and then there's retroviruses like, like HIV, and that's a whole other story. But anyway, all right. So that's the deal. So far, it's a story, and the federal government is, and the CDC is really watching this closely. Let me grab this
paper.
Grab that paper for me behind
that you.
You
just tossed on the floor.
Yeah, that one right there. There was 51 cases in New York as of today, which is Wednesday. And that's where the biggest concentration of cases were. There were 14 in California, 16 in Texas, and then just a couple scattered here and there. One in Arizona, one in Indiana, two in Kansas, two in Massachusetts. So the big ones were centered around New York City, too. And I believe there was one school where they'd taken a field trip to Mexico or something.
Yeah.
So. But anyway, so just stay healthy. If you think you have influenza, you will have a fever. Greater than 100.5 is a pretty good, a very sensitive marker, because usually it'll be higher than that. Fever, aches and pains, sore throat, sometimes nausea and vomiting, but not always.
And actually not usually. And it comes on fairly quickly, from what I understand, this
yep.
one does, as opposed to the regular flu. So it's not just a sore, achy feeling. It's more of a, it'll hit you and then boom, it hits you again and you're down. So if you have those symptoms, get in and get checked.
Yeah.
Are they checking it like a regular flu, like you would do with a nasal swab?
Yes, and what they're doing with this is they're checking the nasal swab, and then they're sending it into the state, because normal community hospital labs don't have an assay for swine flu. But they
I'd say they're probably already treating.
You send it to the state.
If you come in with the symptoms, they'll say you're going to be treated.
Yes, they'll treat you. If you have a fever, muscle aches, sore throat, cough, you know, but the big thing is fever. If you have a sore throat and a cough without the fever, it's probably not influenza.
Allergies.
So, yeah, it could be allergies, could be common cold.
Right.
So, okay.
Now, right. One of the things that makes me, I guess, irritated about the going ahead and being treated without knowing exactly what it is the whole build up to resistance from the virus.
Yeah,
to the drug. So if you don't really have
viruses,
swine flu or the flu.
Viruses really aren't like
bacteria.
Bacteria in the sense that they can teach each other how to be resistant. You know, what bacteria do is they, once they figure out how to be resistant, and this is just evil, is they throw out bits of DNA that teach other bacteria how to be resistant too.
Quicker than we can come up with antibiotics to kill them.
Yeah, and so now we've got this new bug out there, this multiply resistant Acinetobacter, which is a lot more resistant than the MRSA, the methicillin resistant staph,
or
the VRE, the vancomycin resistant enterococcus. They're at least sensitive to something. This new bug isn't sensitive to anything. Now, the only people that I've seen that bug, the Acinetobacter, in, which is a very resistant bacterium, is in really, really sick people. They were sick before, and then they picked it up. So, if you're young and healthy, the risk to you for those kind of bugs is really low.
Yeah, and that scares me more than swine flu.
Well,
as
a diabetic, you have to worry about stuff like that.
Right.
So, anyway, so there you go. That's the swine flu update. We'll keep you up to date on that as much as we can. And let's move on to something a little more light. We have another show that we do, that John and I do, and it is a terrestrial show, and we actually get paid for it, just a little bit, but it's something. And we had newspaper reporters in here last night, and they wanted to take pictures of us, and they said, could you put something up on the screen that looks like sound waves? And, we've got different audio programs, and so I just picked out some audio. It said 10-second promo on it. And so I clicked it.
Now get, before you play it.
Yes, go ahead.
The setup is a female, two females, and then a gentleman with a camera, and
right.
We had never met them previously, have no idea.
And we live in a very conservative...
Would you consider us in the Bible Belt?
Well, sure. Yeah, we
so
are.
We're in the Bible Belt.
And, and we had a doctor and his wife in here that we were interviewing about kidney disease. And so John and I, he gets up with the camera, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to bring this audio up, and this is what I bring up. Hi, I'm Dr. Steve.
And I'm P.A. John. If you have a penis or a vagina...
or both. Don't miss Weird Medicine this Saturday night at 8 p.m. on XM 202. And it was like, we got to, if you have a penis or a vagina, like, click.
What was that?
Yeah, we must have been crazy that day.
I said, we were just goofing.
Yeah.
That was crazy talk.
A couple of men just talking about penises.
And vaginas. Don't forget vaginas.
That's true. Anyway, so it'll be interesting to see what that newspaper article says.
I can't wait.
Did you notice how they all tried to kind of pretend like they hadn't heard it, but it was so loud. There's no way they didn't hear it.
You had the speakers on.
Oh, yeah, so, I had the speakers on wide open. Oh. So. All right, let's talk a little bit about Pat and Big A. We always give a little update because of so many of our listeners contributed money to their medical fund. And we had about $2,400, $2,500 in that fund. And we paid for Big A to have a physical, and that cost $125. And then they gave him some kind of cream or some medication we paid for that. So we're still doing real well. The other day, I get an email from Big A, And he had the two sleep studies, remember? And
right.
Everything was cool. And John Gray from CaseOfTheMondays.net, check out their CD, by the way, had made arrangements to get him this sleep study, and the doctor was going to read it for free and all this kind of stuff. Well, Big A opens his mail one day, and there's a bill in there for $15,000 for two sleep studies. And he was absolutely crapping his pants. He's like, what am I going to do now? Because you remember the first story is I got him in to see some doctor, and
like
it cost him $350 bucks. And we retired that one. It's like, hey, we're doing good. And then he gets his bill for $15,000. Well, it turns out that was a mistake. But then they were going to charge him $2,500 for the BiPAP machine that he needs, you know, the breathing
right.
machine for his sleep apnea. And John's working on that, too, so we'll see. But I said, you know, dude, we didn't raise anywhere close to $15,000. I don't know what you're going to do. So, anyway. That was,
did you not feel a little responsible?
Oh, totally. Yes.
Yeah. And yeah, you, I mean, being the guilty person, I know you were thinking, how am I going to pay this?
I am going to have to pay
this.
Yes,
I know.
So, anyway, thank God for John Gray. So he's working it out.
Oh, man.
All right. Let's talk about Rob from Elizabethton a little bit. Rob, can you get on mic there? Rob was at work the other day, and something happened to him. And this happens to a lot of people around the country, and it's really I think it's important to talk about it. And he got in big trouble with his wife over this, too, so that we can laugh at him. But anyway, So, Rob, tell us what happened.
Well, I'd been having a little bit of chest pain.
Get a little closer to the mic, buddy.
Been having a little bit of chest pain. I've had reflux before, you know, once every couple of years.
And let's preface this. You have type 1 diabetes, and you're on
right.
the pump
yeah.
just like P.A. John, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I am. And so, it didn't feel like the typical acid reflux. It was more a pain, like a tightness across my chest. Tuesday, it got real bad. Stayed at work. I started to worry about it. Started kind of freaking out. So I made the big mistake of Googling it. Chest pain versus indigestion.
Yep.
That was a big mistake. After I made my way through all the homeopathic crap and found, you know, some legitimate sites, they all said, if you have chest pain, call 911.
Yeah.
There's no way I was going to do that. Did not want to do that. Absolutely. Yeah.
Because you were so sure it wasn't anything?
Yeah, I just knew once I got there, they were going to be like, yeah, you're fine.
You know? You were afraid of being ridiculed.
Yeah, exactly.
I hear this all the time. Mm-hmm.
Didn't want to, you know, be the boy that cried wolf. So.
Right, even though you're a diabetic and you were having chest pain.
And you've had diabetes for how long again?
31 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so we understand. I'm just saying I understand why you didn't do it, but anyway, we'll get to that.
So, yeah.
I don't agree with it, but I understand.
Finally, I tried some Mylanta, and that got rid of about 3/4 of it. So
okay.
I thought, you know, on the way home, if it comes back, I'll take myself to the ER, but if not, I'm good. It was just, you know, indigestion
right.
something. Well, it came back.
Okay.
So I get to the ER, I drive myself there, and I sit out in the parking lot for another 10 minutes while it's hurting, going, God, should I go in? Should I not? I know it's going to be nothing. I'm sure it's going to be, or is it?
How many people, John, do you think they just find out in the parking lot in their car, dead or in hell, and they were having the same conversation in their mind?
I
wonder what there's got to be a few every
year. There would
have
to be. I don't want to overrule... interrupt the story,
okay.
but
yeah.
I had a similar episode where a guy came in.
Well,
and,
be careful about HIPAA, though.
Well, I don't even...
You've heard of cases where such and such happens.
I had a friend who told me the same thing.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
And the whole chest pain thing, and kind of a cough up in the... And so I, you know, went through the whole gamut of talking to my friend about what they did to him, and... they put an EKG on him, and sure enough, changes in the EKG of heart attack.
Yeah.
And asked him, did you ever have any pains? Well, last night felt like I was about ready to just come out of my chest. And I said, oh.
Well, not everybody has typical chest pain either. My dad never knew that he was having chest pain until he had his heart attack. And then when they did his stress test after the heart attack, they said, oh, you're having all kinds of changes now. And he said, yeah, that's where when my shoulder hurts. Yeah. And so he was having pain in his shoulder. So not everybody presents like a textbook.
Yeah, an atypical chest pain.
Yeah, and then, you know, there have been people that have been misdiagnosed because they come to the emergency room saying they have a sore throat. And what they're really having is chest pain that's radiating to their neck.
Which is similar to my friend.
Yeah, so there you go. But anyway, so, okay, go on, Rob. So you're sitting out there in the parking lot.
Yeah, and I guess I...
Rolling the dice, spinning the chambers and the gun, playing Russian roulette. Go ahead.
Thanks. Appreciate that. So after the way you put it there, I finally muster the courage up to go in. And, the other thing, I'd seen the silent heart attack for diabetics, John. There you go.
Yeah.
So, I was Googling that, but... So I'm thinking about that in the parking lot, going in. They take my insurance, all that, have me sit down. Then they take me back to triage. And
how quickly did they get you back, by the way? I'm just curious.
Well, they actually made me sit in the waiting room for about 10 more minutes.
Okay. Well, 10 minutes isn't bad. If it was 4 hours, I'd really be...
But I made sure to tell the admission girl. I was like, I don't think this is anything. I really don't. I think, Of course, I didn't know what it was, but I just... But they got me back there, and then once they... did get me to a table, they got the EKG on and everything, and they started an IV, which they never put anything in, but I guess that's standard.
Yeah. You walk just through the doors, you get an IV.
They do that just so if they need to do something quick, they don't have to fart around putting in an IV. They've got it already there.
Yeah, if that was a major heart attack and you were just waiting to code or start dying, they have access to go ahead and start pushing drugs to bring you back
to life. If this had been a real emergency, you would have been instructed to do it anyway. All right.
Grab your flotation device under your seat.
All right. So you go in and they do all this stuff and then they tell you that it's okay.
They do the EKG. He said everything looked good. They want to check the blood work, which what's that?
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about that. There are certain chemicals that are typically found in the heart and not found in other places. And when you have a heart attack, you're damaging heart muscle. And when that heart muscle is damaged, it releases these chemicals into your bloodstream. And when it releases them into the bloodstream, you can detect them by doing a blood test. And so what you're looking for is a real sort of stereotypical peak in those chemicals. So
cardiac enzymes.
Right. And we could get technical about it, but I mean, that's basically how it works, is you're just looking for chemicals that are markers of damage to the heart. So anyway, so they did the blood test. Now, one blood test early in the course can be negative, though. That's why a lot of times they'll want you to stay overnight and get a set of three. And so I'm sure they offered you to spend the night. Is that right?
Yeah, they did.
And did you?
No. I kept looking at my watch going, it's almost 9. It's almost 9. Paige is going to be
That's your
my wife.
Wife
is going to be wondering where I am.
Because you didn't call her and tell her you were going to the emergency room. This is the funny part to me.
Yeah.
Well, there is a funny part?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Chest pain in the ER, that's funny?
Well, okay, the rest of the story is he never called his wife and told her that he's going to the emergency room. So tell us what happened when you got home and told your wife you'd been to the emergency room because you had chest pain.
She kind of figured out through a mistake of mine or the ER, I don't know. I got home. She was in bed reading, so I went ahead and, started getting ready for bed, and I'm getting undressed in there, and I was going to put on a T-shirt, and there was still one of those little...
Oh, Jesus.
The electrolytes right below my...
Oh, my God.
And she goes, what's that, honey? And I was like, nothing, and I'm...
Oh, and then you lied about it.
And so...
Busted.
Then I had to come clean.
No shit.
And then she she got pissed, turned over, and refused to talk to me for... over a day.
Yeah, deservedly so, I'm afraid.
Buy that.
Dude, you should have played the card. Well, I'm glad you're not going to talk to me because, I could have been dead right now. That's right. What about you, Jefferson? Is that what you would have done?
I would have told her, I bet you wish I was dead.
Wow. So you don't buy that? You think she shouldn't have been mad?
I just didn't want to scare her.
Yeah.
I mean, her dad had a massive heart attack about 8 years ago, and same hospital. I didn't want to scare unless it was something legit.
I know. I don't know. Dude, didn't you just not want to deal with her at that moment, though? Isn't that really what it was? Does she listen to the show? Because if she doesn't, you can be honest.
Sometimes she does. But, yeah, I'll just say it. Yeah, I didn't want to have to deal with that right then.
Yeah. No, I know. Yeah. It's very understandable. All of the things that you're saying are very understandable. All of them are completely I have issue with. You're my friend, but and we've got a lot of people listening. Chest pain isn't a symptom to dick around with, at least the first time that you have it. If you have any risk factors at all, if you're diabetic, if you have high cholesterol, high blood pressure especially, or if you've got a family history of heart disease, if you start having this chest pain that is just, you know, crushing, or a weight on your chest, or a dull pain, then and you haven't been worked up for it before, it deserves a trip to the emergency room, I think.
Especially if you have risk factors such as a smoker, overweight, diabetes.
Right.
Just reiterating.
Yeah.
Now, I'm in suspense. So how was your first heart attack?
He did
not as bad
attack.
As I thought it would be.
It was reflux.
The girl next to me that had tried to kill herself that was in the ER, sounded like she's probably in worse shape.
Worse off.
But yeah, it was just reflux, apparently.
Okay. And see, he's not bound by HIPAA because he didn't, so you can say stuff like that. But most of these cases will be something other than a heart attack. But 20% of people who are having heart attacks get discharged from the emergency room because or don't ever know that they had it. So I think you were worried about, and you texted me during this saying I just don't want to be a wimp. And what I texted back is, if they work you up and you don't have heart disease and you keep going back to the emergency room 10 times because you're having chest pain, then you're a wimp. But the first time, especially if you've never had that symptom before, totally understandable. And definitely call your wife on the way. So because women are big on what would have happened if. You know, if they get in a wreck and they're not hurt, then it's like, oh my God, what if I hadn't had my seatbelt on? What if, I mean, it's, I hear this a lot of times from women, that's this sort of pattern of thinking. And so she was thinking, what if you had gone there and died and you hadn't called her and she wouldn't have known what was going on? That's why she was mad.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, she's...
And that you didn't trust her to, you know, be there and support you during all this and all that stuff. You know, they're big on that stuff.
See, that makes a lot of sense. You have a good way of breaking things down.
Oh, thank you, John. So, but anyway.
Well, you know the other problem, and he mentioned it, and I see this a lot, is that he was playing it down to the nurses.
Yeah.
Oh, it's no big deal. Mm-hmm. I feel okay. And they write that down.
Didn't want to be a wimp.
Right, and they write that down.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
Yep. That, you know, that could delay something, too. It just, I'm not saying be a hypochondriac and jump at everything, but chest pain is one of those things. I really wish that everybody would take it a little more seriously.
Right.
We could say, because cardiovascular disease, frankly, number one killer in these United States, and we're working on it, you know, with the cholesterol medicines and adjusting risk factors and trying to work on diabetes, which is a huge risk factor. You know, we're trying to get the numbers down, and they made some progress on that, but still, I just really thought that was an illustrative story, and everything you said is what a million people have said. You know, your thought process are totally understandable, and I'm just saying that don't go with those thought processes.
Get it checked out.
Yeah. And I'm glad it turned out to be
afterwards.
Nothing.
I mean, you know, knowing it was negative.
Yeah. And out of that million people, 200,000 are dead.
What's that?
Out of that million people, 200,000 are dead.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
Possibly.
There you go.
That was a good call on the apology there, Rob.
Thank you, John.
I think that's hilarious. He takes his shirt off and he's got EKG. That's something your wife doesn't ever want to see.
No.
That's like having, you know, lipstick on your schlong or
I'll
something.
I'll give him $100 if next week he does it again. Just has one on there.
And
still have an IV little thing in there.
Or take
his arm and just come in every night with a different.
Take a lighter and burn some of your chest hairs in the pattern of a paddle.
Yeah. So they shocked him. I'm fine.
You need to get him some of these bracelets that they wear at the hospital.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Check ins.
He could just walk in with the
every once in a while, just wear one.
Yeah, nothing.
Yeah, nothing.
Oh, it's nothing.
It's nothing. I'm fine. All right. You want to read this next one, John?
Yeah, sure. Dear Dr. Steve, my kid is in kindergarten, and they are totally paranoid about peanut products being brought to school. Is this really an issue? I don't remember this when we were kids.
Yeah, and this was something actually Rob was talking about earlier, too, because didn't you have some issues with this in your kid's school, Rob?
My wife did.
Okay.
The school she's teaching at, she, yeah.
Okay, oh, she's a teacher, thing. Okay. Yeah, you know, allergies are caused by proteins in the immune system, and I know we got a letter from school that said, you know, can't send any peanut products to school for snack, you know, for snack time.
Bullshit.
So, well, kids are sometimes sensitized to peanut proteins, and when they're exposed to them, the antibodies in their body just go crazy attacking the protein, and this causes this cascade of effects that results in release of a chemical called histamine and a bunch of other chemicals causing itching and sneezing, and sometimes it can cause trouble breathing or even a fatal reaction. You can basically be exposed to peanuts in three ways: either direct contact, and that's where you eat peanuts or something that's got peanuts in it; cross contact, where you've got unintended introduction of peanuts into a product, and it's usually during processing or handling. That's why you'll see things that say this.
Food was produced
in a place that makes peanuts or, you know, deals with peanuts, or you can inhale it. This is the problem that we have in schools, or that they're worried about, is an allergic reaction can occur if you inhale dust or aerosols containing peanuts, like peanut flour or peanut oil cooking spray. So it's being diagnosed more and more frequently in kids that live in urban areas. And so one of the hypotheses of this is this thing called the hygiene hypothesis. And what it says is that we are living too clean a lifestyle now. You know, we've cleaned up the open sewers in our cities that we had in the, whenever that was, the 1800s. And we've cleaned up our water supply. And now we're having our kids wash their hands with handy wipes before they come home from school every day. And they're not being exposed to antigens like they used to be, you know, to different proteins. And they're less tolerant. Their immune system is less tolerant because it's being exposed to less things. And, 20% of kids will outgrow it. New studies show that a significant portion of kids can be cured with desensitization therapy, but this can only be done under a doctor's supervision where they introduce more and more peanut protein daily. Most of the reactions are not life-threatening, but they can get that way at any time. You could have a kid that just been sneezing, and then the next thing you know, he's having a huge reaction to the peanut. So, and nobody really knows why. You know, your kid can bring peanuts to school, just not food for other kids to eat if there is a kid with peanut allergy. There's no reason why we should be hysterical about this. You know, if your kid's okay with peanuts, he or she can have little Debbie cakes, which, by the way, turn you into Big Debbie if you eat them. But a little Debbie cake with peanuts on it, that's fine. That's not going to hurt anybody else. Just your kid can't share food. And if you have a kid with peanut allergy, you have to teach them not to accept food from other people unless they know that it's safe. And that's it. Oh, and if you have a kid with peanut allergy, they need a medical alert bracelet, and you got to be a responsible parent.
Hmm. Can I not have a problem with this?
You can.
Yes, please do.
I mean, when did the exception start controlling the majority?
Well, it doesn't.
It always does.
Well, your kid can't bring peanut products to school.
No, they can bring them. They can't bring them for the other kids. So, that, like, if they're bringing snack time, they can't bring a, you know, peanut brittle for everybody because you've got one kid in there that's got a peanut allergy.
So the perfectly healthy poor kid loses out.
Right. Well, you bring something else, you know.
Chocolate.
I just think it's crap. I mean, I'm not... I don't know. When we were kids,
we don't want kids dying. I mean, you know.
I mean, you know, I don't know. Maybe I see it the wrong way, but I mean, if you think back, look at the shit we ate when we were kids.
I know. That falls into that hygiene hypothesis, you know.
And that hygiene hypothesis, that's just, to me, that's just saying that in the past, something else would kill us before.
Well, no, what they're saying is that we used to lead a dirtier lifestyle. We were exposed to more allergens in the past than we are now. And our immune systems were able to rev up a little bit and have a more normal response. And now we're just not exposed to enough, so our immune system sometimes will make these crazy responses to things, and peanuts is one of them.
Gotcha.
You know, so... I was going to do Shannon's thing next.
You want to do that?
Yeah, we always have to have a Shannon from South Florida question. So,
All right.
She was featured on our most mediocre of show last week. And we love Shannon from South Florida, and here is her question of the week.
Hey, Dr. Steve. It's Shannon from South Florida. Just listened to your show. It was a doozy. Love the ass waxing being thing. That was awesome. I had to have a question about the herpes thing.
Of course.
You said you can get two on your lip, and your lip is usually simplex one. But my question is, if you have simplex one on your lip and you give someone a blowjob, do they get simplex one down there? Okay, see you later.
Okay, we'll see ya.
She asked the question like she's about to do it.
I know. What cracks me up is she says...
And I thought we answered that already.
It's like she needs an immediate answer.
Yeah.
No.
Because some guy's got his pants around his knees as we...
She's always asking things that she needs an immediate answer for.
Lost tampon.
Right. Oh, the areola thing. I don't know why that was so immediate. But
she may have been looking in the mirror.
Yeah, maybe. She did ask, well, we kind of answered this, but I'm not sure we answered this completely specifically. I wanted to make sure that we did so that people would understand. But what cracks me up about that is she doesn't mind saying blowjob, but then she says down there. She uses a euphemism for genitals, but she's fine saying I'm going to give this guy a blowjob. But anyway, HSV2 is the one that tends to be genital herpes, and HSV1 tends to be oral. We talked about that before. What I didn't really talk about is that there's a reason for it. There are, when these viruses are dormant, they hide in these bundles of nerves in the body called ganglia, and there's one ganglion in the skull called the trigeminal ganglion, and that's where HSV2 prefers to live. Now, it will live in the sacral ganglion, which is down by the pelvis, where HSV2, oh, shit, I said it all backwards,
yeah,
I was didn't
thinking.
I? Okay, sorry.
HSV1 up top.
HSV1 up top, HSV2 down below. So HSV1 likes to live in the trigeminal ganglion, which is up in the, near the jaw. And it prefers to live there, and there's something different about it because it will live in the sacral ganglion, which is down below where HSV2 usually lives. But it loses some of its potency when it does that, and it's not as able to infect the skin when it's living in a place that it's not used to. Okay, so there really is a reason why HSV1 is generally up above and HSV2 is down below. Now, let's say you have HSV1 on your lip and you give someone oral sex. They can get HSV1 in their genitalia. Okay, so if she gives this guy a blowjob, then he can get lesions on his penis. Okay, but they will tend to be less, they'll come out less frequently and they'll be less painful, and they'll last less long, less amount of time. HSV1 tends to be a milder infection anyway, and people always say, well, herpes 1 is the good one because it just causes lip herpes, and HSV2 is the bad one because it causes genital herpes. But let me tell you something. HSV1 can infect the eye, and it can also infect the brain. And you can get this thing called herpes encephalitis. So really, and HSV2 never does that. So, I have some issues with calling one good and one bad when the one that they call good really causes a lot more problems. If it ever causes a problem, the problems are a lot more serious than HSV2 does. But HSV2 comes out more often, and then it's more painful, and you get more blisters and all that stuff. So,
and it don't make a penis look too pretty, I reckon.
No, it's not that bad. It's just little tiny blisters.
I've seen pictures.
Clusters of blisters.
I've seen pictures in dermatology books.
And
it doesn't look good.
Yeah, it's not that bad. I mean, it's not a life-ending thing if it happens.
No.
And so many people in this country are, affected by it. But only 5% of people are bothered enough to consider oral HSV1 a medical problem, to seek help for it. So
just for the lips.
Yep. All right. Do we have time to do Suboxone? We got 5 minutes. We could do. We've been promising to do this for a while.
All right, go for it.
And we even teased it last time. It says, "Dear Dr. Steve, I'm addicted to OxyContin. There's no methadone clinic near me, and I can't do this alone. Is there anything out there that might help?" And you know, OxyContin addiction is becoming more and more common. Not just hillbilly heroin anymore. You know, there are some estimates that say that prescription drug abuse is outstripping, you know, street drug use. You know, you've got in this area, it's methamphetamine and OxyContin. Those are the big ones. Now, Purdue, the manufacturer of OxyContin, I believe, was not trying to make something that drug addicts would like. As a matter of fact, they really thought that they had produced this oxycodone, which is a narcotic, mm-hmm. and it's long-acting, and it's good for cancer pain. It's also good for real severe chronic pain.
A great pain medicine.
Yeah, it's great pain medicine. And they embedded it in a wax matrix or some kind of delivery device to allow it to be released slowly into the bloodstream, so it lasts a long time. And they thought that they had come up with a foolproof method to make this not abusable. And, of course, never underestimate the ingenuity of a drug addict, because they figured out how to crush it and snort it and get this amazing high off of it. So it is extremely habit-forming when taken that way. And there are serious lack of inpatient drug rehab centers in this country. You know, narcotics are becoming more accepted as treatment for chronic pain, and doctors are in a bad position.
Right.
Because if you we're being taught now that if you don't treat chronic pain, then you're committing malpractice.
All right.
So you can get sued for not treating someone's pain. But also, if we over-treat pain, then the DEA is going to come down on us. So you have mm-hmm. to walk this perfect tightrope. And it's tough. Methadone clinics have a real bad reputation, but really methadone is a wonderful medication, mm-hmm. and it works well. The problem is the way they've got it set up with the federal government is you got to go every day. And if you're traveling 90 miles to go to your methadone clinic, your compliance isn't going to stay. I mean, you're just going to quit going after a while. Mm-hmm. A lot of people do, because you got to go every single day, and you got to get your dose. And the neat thing about methadone is that it's a long-acting narcotic, and it's cheap, mm-hmm. And it works great, and it's worked for years. But you know, and a lot of people don't want to be seen going in and out of a methadone clinic, mm-hmm. Because everybody knows why you're there. So regular doctors can't legally prescribe methadone for drug addiction. They can do it for pain, but they can't do it for drug addiction. So out comes Suboxone. Now, Suboxone is a combination of buprenorphine, which is a what we call an agonist antagonist. It works like a narcotic when it hits the receptor in the body, but then it blocks other narcotics from hitting the receptor after it's attached to it. Okay, so when you first take it, you get a little bit of a narcotic effect, but then if you take other narcotics on top of it, they won't do anything. They'll just bounce off.
If you don't already have them on board.
Right. Well, even if you do, this will knock them out.
Okay.
Okay? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Am I making sense, Jefferson, mm-hmm. Rob?
Right.
That makes sense. Okay. Suboxone can be prescribed by any doctor who's taken a test on its use and has applied for a special DEA license. It also has naloxone in it, which is a narcotic blocker, too. And so what you do is you get a patient who's motivated. They come in. They can go to their regular family doctor as long as they've got the license to give Suboxone. So you're not going to a clinic where everybody knows what's going on. And you come in slightly withdrawing. So you didn't take your OxyContin for a day. And you're getting a little bit of the cold turkey, and you're getting the cold chills and all that stuff. And then they give you your first dose of Suboxone, and immediately, just like that, you feel good because it's hitting that receptor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if you then went home and took a couple of OxyContin, it's not going to do anything because it's going to bounce off that receptor because the Suboxone grabs hold of the receptor and blocks it. And you can maintain on it very well with no withdrawal, and then later on taper off of it. And it's a lot easier to taper off the Suboxone than it is to taper off the OxyContin
or the methadone
or whatever. Yeah. So the cool thing about it is if you got addicted to the OxyContin because you had chronic pain, Suboxone is a great pain medicine too. Mm-hmm. You know, so it works really well for people who are addicted to narcotics who have chronic pain.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of websites I want to throw you toward. Number one, if you're interested in the swine flu, go to cdc.gov/swine flu. If you're interested in Suboxone, you can go to www.suboxone, that's suboxone.com. And I think we're about out of time. Now, listen, mm-hmm. I appreciate you guys being here. It's a little more serious show than we're used to doing, but I really appreciate it, Jefferson and John and Rob and Double Vasectomy. Todd, we didn't get to your promo. We are going to have a contest on the show. When does the Star Trek thing come out, Todd?
It's this weekend, isn't it?
Oh, it's this weekend. Okay.
I think it is.
Well, go to www.trekyourself.com. If you go to drsteve.com, you can see our Double Vasectomy Todd's Romulan message. And we were going to play it tonight. We ran out of time. So, but it's on our website, and it is hilarious. So, don't miss our show in 2 weeks at 5 p.m. Eastern right here on the Saturday Night Virus. We'll be keeping you up to date on the swine flu. And of course, we'll also talk about dick cheese and, you know, ball drippings and all that stuff. And that's just how we roll. So let me just say how much I appreciate the amazing Ron Bennington. He's been a mentor to this show from the beginning. We'll never be able to repay him for his kindness and support. He knows what I'm talking about. And I'm willing Tacy to him when I die. So for P.A. John and me, check your stupid nuts for lumps. Quit smoking, get off your asses, and get some exercise. And we'll see you in another 2 weeks for the next edition of Weird Medicine. Dublin, no.